Hello, everybody. This is Eric Stahl, and welcome to another episode of the Liberty Plays podcast. It's the official podcast of the Libertarian Party of Greater Peoria. My name, again, is Eric Stahl, and around the room to my left is...
Joe Keel, treasurer for Libertarian Party of Greater Peoria.
I'm Jason Spires. I'm the ballot access director for the Libertarian Party of Greater Peoria, and I'm also the director of field operations for the Cass Jackson for Governor campaign.
I'm Dana Olson. I am the secretary for the Libertarian Party of Greater Peoria and the director of chapter development for the state party.
I'm Donnie Henry. I am the chair of the Libertarian Party of Greater Peoria.
I'm Jacob Irish, the vice chair of the Libertarian Party of Greater Peoria.
All right. And as a podcast professional, I have to apologize for the last podcast. So we got about 30 minutes into that. I don't know what happened, if the batteries dropped out or what, but we lost some of Cash and Claire. And this is an amateur operation, as I said, but I really do feel like a schmuck, and I hate when that happens.
They missed the best part.
They did.
But
they did.
That's okay.
Yeah. You had to
we
be
heard
here.
It.
We heard
it.
Be here. And that's going to be a theme, too. You have to be here at the meeting, so we'll get into that here in a little bit. As usual, this podcast follows the monthly meeting, and we just had the May meeting. Donnie is our chairman. Let's review that. What happened here tonight?
So we had a great meeting. We were able to bring in Bennett Morris. He's the newly elected chair of the Libertarian Party of Illinois. And then we had the illustrious John Stewart,
the
former governor.
One, yeah.
Yes, the illustrious one. So what'd you guys think?
Bennett was
awesome.
Great.
Great meeting.
Yeah. I mean, Bennett talked about his goals, which I really liked. He talked about, the chapters and the and getting more candidates, and I like the fact that he's got some goals set up for the next year or so.
And they seem within reach too.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I loved what John was talking about, his vision of the Libertarian Party and his experience over the last year that he spent campaigning. I think the insight's truly valuable.
Yeah. So, mm-hmm. And for you guys at home, what he was talking about was basically his lessons learned from the convention, or all the way from his run from announcing all the way through the convention, and just the big take home was pattern recognition. And, bottom line is that we need to be a professional organization, at least act like it,
Yeah.
I thought it was good.
Yeah.
Dana, you're awfully quiet.
Just a little tired today, guys. No, I thought it was a great meeting. I definitely learned a lot. I thought it was actually very interesting, your Liberty talk, Donnie.
Yeah. Yeah, thanks.
Especially just, Donnie, you specifically talked about the difference between libertarianism and authoritarianism and kind of just broke it down from, how you get from authoritarianism to anarchism. Yeah. And personally, I just kind of learned a lot and was able to maybe identify a little bit more of specifically what libertarian am I / the Big Tent party that you're mentioning.
Yeah, so let's go around. I want to see where did you guys fall on that?
My problem was the education. I'm kind of John talked about this. I'm a classic libertarian, but man, the education loop. I think mine just swings a little bit out more in orbit there. I agree with John, and I think you have to have an educated society, and if you don't, you're going to end up with I would say mongrels or weird. But you have to have smart people, and even from our free commerce state, as libertarians, we're all about the free market.
Mm-hmm.
Education sells a free market area, so I think that education is something we have to worry about. So I'm just a little bit further on that loop.
And I agree, so that would make you a Jeffersonian libertarian, a classical liberal, and that's where I fall, too.
The reason I'm a Jeffersonian libertarian is because I do agree that education needs to be within your populace, because the children of the day will be your government leaders of tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And if you want to have children understand we don't need a massive government, maybe they should be educated on how things work. And the thing is that if you depend on people to be able to pay to educate their child, then you better hope you don't have a heroin addict for a mother. You better hope that you have parents that are educated and can pay for it. And I don't think that in a free society that you should be punished because your parents made bad decisions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but isn't that accomplished by the voucher system?
I'm for a voucher system. What I'm saying is I'm for a voucher system. And there's people in our party that hopefully will not be on our national committee too long who are insulted when people support having a voucher on education.
Well, and I'll name him. Arvin Vora, I've had a couple of times where I've said stuff on his thing. Is it, just because... just because we have a public education system doesn't mean that we have to fund it through coercive means. You know, we can find moral ways to fund an education system.
I strongly believe that taxpayers, by and large, they regularly vote for sales taxes and things like that to help support regular school districts, and they do pass. I firmly believe that you will get people who will voluntarily agree to a tax to fund education systems, as long as those education systems are accountable and perhaps done through a voucher program.
And we can only do that if you limit the size and scope of government. I mean, you have to do that.
Go ahead.
Where'd you fall, Jacob?
I fell as a Jeffersonian libertarian, fall in the same category with the education piece. I wanted to say, you know, let's take it a step further as a Jeffersonian libertarian. It's not saying that you're for 100% funded from the government education, right? There's just like you said, you know, I think people will voluntarily vote to support their education in local districts, and that I just want to say that administration is far too enlarge in education. I think the accountability piece is a part of it.
But don't you think that that's actually a problem right now, is that it is a public system, so therefore that there is kind of that inflating of the administrative costs? And so I feel like if it were to go into more of a private system, that it would be a lot
reform.
More about
pension reform.
Well,
so where do you fall, Dana? Where do you fall?
I'm a classic liberal. I'm not a Jeffersonian because I do not believe that public education is the right way to go. Specifically because of look at the public education system right now.
So are you against tax funding for education? Are you against the government funding the education?
Let me defend her though, because every time the government subsidizes something, and that's what we do, we subsidize education, the cost of it goes up. So it isn't an efficient manner, and that's why, you know, the voucher system is such a great way to go. You know, it creates competition in the marketplace.
Exactly. Yeah. And so that's what it's all about, is that when you have more competition, when it goes into the more of the private sector, then competition equals it's going to be more innovative, it's going to make more lean costs, and it's not going to look at these administrative costs. If you actually look at business and just the administrators, they're making the lower ends of the money. The actual people that are doing the work, the engineers, they're the ones that are making more. So if you equate that to the actual education system, the teachers are the ones that should be making more. The administrators should not be making nearly as much as they are. And that the only way you're going to actually get that is if you go into more of a private system rather than the public, like, bloated system that you have right now.
But we're
when we're talking about public education, are we talking about... What level of education?
I didn't catch that. I feel like I was a damn.
I am with Eric on that.
As a manager of people who do a task daily, I do believe I should make more money than them. So I'm just saying, you know.
Yes.
But it depends, I guess, on your perspective.
Well, this could go round and round. But Joe Keel has not put his libertarian
brand. When we're talking about public education and public funding for education, we have to be more specific on that. As far as college goes, that's a completely different matter than kindergarten through senior year of high school. As far as kindergarten and senior year through high school, you can get that entire education, public funded, all that jazz. You can end up owning your own business, and as you all know, well, most everybody here knows, you can still commit a felony.
Yeah.
And still spend 25 years in prison for it.
Oh, who did 15 years? I know someone did 15.
I think there's
well, that one was even that one was nonviolent. Yeah. But you guys know the violent one that I had, but not per. I you know anyway.
Oh, you had
felonies.
I'm still putting you on the spot. Where'd you fall on the spectrum?
Generally speaking, I fell into minarchism with a skosh of classical liberal and modern conservative.
Okay. That's a wide word.
Where were you at?
I was a Jeffersonian libertarian. So we're kind of mostly on the
same
thing.
I think Whitney Houston said it best. I think children are our future. Teach them well, let them lead the way.
With a private voucher system.
That's right!
I don't remember that lyric. All right.
I can't agree with Rhodes in classical liberalism. With the point that I gave about the Rhodes that they did here in Peoria.
Yeah.
Anyway, I did want to talk about Jason and the signature drive, because he is an animal and he's a rock star in the state of Illinois.
Yep.
And I love the point you brought up today, where it's not about scheduling time to actually hit special events, but you're every minute of the day you just walk and talk it.
Yeah, one thing I've been trying to beat my drum about constantly is we had at least 121, 123 voting members at the convention, which means they went out of their way to get their butt to Bloomington to make sure they voted at the convention. There was way more than 120 people there. If we had 121 people get 4 signatures a day for every day that we had the ballot drive, we wouldn't need a paid petitioner ever. We'd have 44,000 signatures. We're just getting 4 a day. Take a clipboard, put it in your car. As you go out through your day, carry the clipboard with you. People will ask, why you got a clipboard? It's a perfect opportunity. I got 4 signatures literally going out to my car as Bennett went to get his notary stamp.
That's a great story.
Mm-hmm. It's not that hard. You don't have to schedule events. Just carry a clipboard on you.
Well, in support of that, too, when Dave and I did Beer Fest, we went in after collecting signatures. He carried one around him. Guy, why do you have that clipboard? Exactly why. Yeah. He got a signature out of it.
So, quick question. So, just say, I'm in the supermarket, and I'm going grocery shopping, and I have my clipboard in my cart. Is that something that I can actually say, if someone asks me about it, can I get a petition signature that way? Or am I actually allowed to talk to people about it?
If you are going about your day and you're at that store to buy goods and services, you did not go there for loitering to get signatures, there's no violation if a person asks you and you inquire for their signature.
Cool.
You're not allowed to go on private property and solicit signatures without their permission because then you're violating. But if you're just going through your day and you're going in that sort of shop, you entered their premises for the purpose of their business.
Perfect.
They're not going to have a problem with you gotten an occasional signature.
So bottom line, get your signatures. We've got to get on the ballot. If we're not on the ballot, it's all for nothing.
Anybody who needs a clipboard, a pen to throw in their car so they always have it, it's SPYRES. Find me on Facebook, and I will get a clipboard to you.
And a pen. He'll get you a pen. All right. The Liberty Talk. We did change up this week for the meeting, or this month for the meeting. You got to be here for the meetings. That's kind of our thing now. We were broadcasting the whole thing. Mm-hmm. It was a little clumsy anyway, and I kind of like cleaning this up. So let's talk about the Liberty Talk. That was
I did. Yeah,
that's right.
And we just talked about the So authoritarian versus libertarian. And the point is that we talk about it on the podcast. Well, we're no longer giving you guys freebies. We're libertarians. So you got to be here at the meeting. Yeah. If you're not here at the meeting, you don't get to learn about.
They're
the
a fun meeting. Yeah, everybody's having a good time. So
that's not true. Right. We're always promoting the message of liberty.
Always, but you don't get that message.
We'll give you a taste, but not the whole. Yeah.
Before we get to our special guest, did want to plug the shopping cart on the Liberty Place website. We are selling tiers, tier collectors. What do we call those things?
We are selling tiers. We're selling the tiers of the Democrats and Republicans.
Yeah.
Is what we're selling.
If you have a beer.
We have a lot in stock, too.
Yes, we do. So if you have a beer and you need a koozie for that beer, you get to decide whether you want Republicans or Democrat tiers.
Or both.
Or both. And Nick Starwark has a video. Check that out.
It's Memorial Day coming up, and I guarantee you're going to have a can of beer at some point in your hand. And these things are red, white, and blue between the two of them. Yeah. So what's better to have in your hand than some Republican tiers or some Democrat tiers?
And for all you delegates out there, we will have them at the convention. So get ready.
How many people do you know that would want a Democrat tiers koozie or a Republican? Everybody that I know would want one because the just what we're trying to stop the two-party system duopoly.
Here's what
is exactly why it would work.
Here's what I've been waiting for happen. I've been waiting for Republicans, if they win an election, to buy the Democratic ones to hand out to their friends and say, quit crying. Right? And then the other way around.
And dare I say the beers taste better?
Oh, I agree. Yeah, I agree.
I agree. All
right. Yeah,
certainly a special smugness they have to them.
Oh, yeah.
All right. So our special guest tonight is John Stewart, the illustrious one.
Yes.
And Donnie, you know this guy better than anybody, so please introduce John to our people who don't know him, maybe.
So John was a former Libertarian candidate for governor. Dana and I both worked on his campaign.
As well as Jacob
was the meme lord. And we possibly had one of the greatest comebacks. We took cash to the brink, and unfortunately, we came a little short. But John is a businessman. He's a family man, and just one of the most well-rounded, a Renaissance man. And I respect him to death, and I think that he's an asset to our party. So without further ado, who do we have here?
Hello,
John. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for coming to Peoria.
Thank you for having me. As always, Peoria has been almost became like my base camp of true support that really meant a lot to me. When you're on the road for a year, putting over 10,000 miles in, and taking the heat from everybody, from the press to your own party to your opponents, it's nice. It's really we'll say that, although I had really enjoyed so many of the chapters, and I really mean that, that I really enjoyed a special relationship with Peoria, and I'm glad this will be my only one and only stop on the, as Matt Scarra once called it, the John Stewart Tears and Apology Tour.
And where's Scarra at?
I don't know.
He's a good guy, though.
I said that to Scarra actually towards the end there. I'm like, man, how much the personal investment you have by the time you get to the convention, and if you don't win, it's brutal.
Brutal.
It's like going through a divorce. Yeah. I mean, it's got to be just the most horrible.
Yeah, when I drove back, first of all, I was driving back from central Illinois in the daytime, and I had not done that in a year because every time a chapter meeting ended or a debate, it was, 10 o'clock at night. And I just felt like, somebody just unstopped the clog of hair and grease in the trap of my sink. And it was like, I just felt this, a relief because, I had the biggest thing I did. I told Donnie I wanted to finish strong and to look at my kids and my wife and my friends and my supporters that although there were times where I wanted to quit, I just wanted to throw in the towel. I finished it, like a man, in honor, in my word, in being a man. Sometimes I fail at it, but it's important to me. And I just want to know that I feel that I finished this thing as strong as I possibly could. And again, Donnie, Lupe, and Dana, and Jacob mounted, I think, the biggest comeback of a primary in 20, 25 years in Illinois. Yeah. And I've talked to other people in other parties who, they don't even remember even somebody having to come back. It's either a wash or it's a close race. And so it was amazing, just as a person who enjoys politics, seeing what Dana and Donnie, masterminded. It was really, really interesting, to be honest with you. And the fact that I, was 30 votes down when Donnie did the whip count. Mm-hmm. I went from leading the, I went from being the, I voted for Trump, but, he's a shoo-in, to November and December, falling out into second place, late winter, being in literally third place at times. That Donnie took the whip count, I was 30 votes down. It was over.
And I remember at the rock bottom was when you had that flu. Do you guys remember when he had the flu?
Oh, yeah.
At the
debate. Well, I think the rock bottom, I'm a Nixon fan. Mm-hmm. I think the rock bottom was the Richard Nixon had the Saturday Night Massacre where he fired the Attorney General and fired this guy. I think my lowest point was, I call it the John Stewart Saturday Morning Massacre, when I kept sending out 9 million Facebook posts. It's the only campaign where an opponent does something really stupid on a video and the other opponent gets the heat for it. I was sitting there at a diner in Chicago down the street from the car dealership. And the owner goes, no, he's Greek. He's, my friend, what is the problem? I said, my opponent did a really bonehead thing with his campaign, and everyone's mad at me. So that's when the John Stewart Saturday Morning Massacre of, don't blame me. Get off my back. This is what I brought to the table. I kept my word. If you don't think this is important, of the media I can get, the gravitas that I bring along, being a businessman and a married father of 20 years, and well liked by the Republican and Democratic Party and liked by the media, I don't know what else to tell you. And I had a kind of, I didn't do it as classy as I thought I was. I don't think I acted like a total gentleman. But at that point, I was pissed, ready to give up. Couldn't finish my eggs and hash browns and because everyone was calling me the Antichrist because Cass Jackson did something stupid on video. And for anybody that doesn't know, Kim Jansen was the Chicago Tribune reporter. And he called me, I believe, forgive me if I don't get the dates right, on a Thursday, I'm going to the auction. He said, I got this story, blah, blah, blah. And I begged Kim to beg his editor to keep it out of the print. If that story would have went to print, meaning an actual newspaper, I think it would have got ugly. I'm talking women's rights groups. We were in the heart of the Me Too movement. I am not railing on Cash right now. I'm just talking about the incident.
Not yet.
And I want to tell people that I pretty much gave up a spleen, donated a spleen to the Tribune, because cash is part of my party, to keep that out of print, tone it, say that it was a tongue-in-cheek as much as he could in the article, and also I found out who did it, or who, I found out the gender in the area of the state. I found out it was a female from the Champaign area. So, you know, I did my best to help this party and to cash keep it as, and I'm not looking for a pat on the back. So to know that I did that on Friday, helped out an opponent who never lifted a finger to help me or say a kind thing about me, donated a spleen to the Tribune to keep our party out of print media, and on Saturday have this party tell me that I'm the asshole, I'm sorry.
No good deed goes unpunished.
Yeah, you know, that's sorry. And then to not to have Cash wait 4 months to apologize. How people in this party didn't simply, I didn't expect people to be mad at him. I didn't expect people to yell at him, to tell him to get out. I expected this party to call him up en masse and say, you better apologize right now. You know, let's get through this. And that didn't happen. And that didn't. He instead chose to go. Sorry. He instead chose to go on the video and call either Matt or I some very harsh name. You know, or whoever put out the video. Or
I
whatever.
Believe it was Pencil Dick.
Yeah. You know. So.
Oh yeah.
You know.
Thanks. I forgot that vocabulary.
So just trying to be accurate.
So you tell me. Facts. You know, you help an opponent. You help a party. You stay out of the fray, and you're the Antichrist on Saturday morning. That did not sell well with me, and I was not happy with Cash. I was not happy with his team, and I certainly wasn't happy with many members of the Libertarian Party. So
Jacob had a question.
Yeah.
About
yeah, let's get right into it. Yeah. First, I just want to say that you know, I've always admired you. Hindsight's 20/20. I wish I had become involved much earlier than we did. I think
I do too.
Most of us do. But that being said, going right off of what you said, so Cash Jackson.
Yeah.
How's he doing, John?
Let me address first that there was a time at the, I call it the comedy stores debate, where we had the neon sign behind us.
The brick wall.
Where yeah. I thought Matt and Cash were actually going to go to blows. there was a point, and I'm going to be tongue-in-cheek, but I'm being honest. And I told my wife and I were laughing about this, where Cash was speaking, and I was buying into it. I was looking at him like, wow, this guy's incredible. But I say that in all sincerity, you know. I don't think he does it on purpose, because it's called neuro-linguistic programming and mass hypnotic speech patterns. It's something Barack Obama was taught and did, and basically, I feel, won the presidency with. I don't think Cash learned it. I think it's natural, and it is a gift from God. And one of the things Cash uses is the three-word phraseology. You know, the state of Illinois has to confiscate, delineate, and deviate. You know, the three. And he did that at one point in the comedy store debate. And I looked at him with, like, you know, like, I'm like, this guy is, you know, he's either the Antichrist or he's going to be the next president of the United States. And I mean that. I'm joking, of course. So, you know, I've only seen two of his appearances on TV. I'm very impressed that he was, however he garnered them, he got them. Again, typical Cash Jackson, speaks 10 times better than I speak, comes off as a Rhodes Scholar, speaks, you know, at times can be a remarkably polished candidate. And for that, I completely respect that and have to give him kudos. The only thing that I can ever, and I don't ever want to come off as bitter, you know, a bitter politician, because I'm not at all. I've just said his praises, is that I challenge Cash to what I talked about today, which is pattern recognition. We are a third party. We have beliefs that are not akin to the Republican and Democratic Party. But to get people from the Democratic, Republican, and Independent side to vote for us in the elections, we have to conform to a certain, just a little bit of a conform. You know, in NASCAR, you can do whatever you want with your car, paint it whatever your color, put whatever driver in. But they do have one long metal piece that they put over the car, and you gotta fit that. You gotta at least look like a NASCAR car. And I challenge Cash to always be mindful of pattern recognition. That we're, whenever and whenever he looked as he looked as presidential or as gubernatorial as possible, and its details. I encourage Cash to further elaborate or highlight his naval record. And I would make suggestions of, when I ran with Mark Kirk, he wore a good conduct lapel pin from the Navy. People would ask him about it. Newspapers would ask him about it. I think Cash should wear something like that. I think Cash should get a 20-year service naval ring. It looks very Annapolis and West Point in an interview. I'm sorry if I'm spitting out.
It's okay.
All things that I think one of his strongest suits, his naval career, should be highlighted. And there are some things that he could do visuals and perception-wise to really highlight that. And I think that's one of his strong suits. And there's going to be challenges for him. The problem I see with Cash's campaign is that what he is good at might end up costing him. He is a very charismatic person that might catch fire. If it catches fire, that's going to catch the Republican and Democrat parties, which is then going to trigger the...
Trigger warning.
Yeah, it's going to trigger the KitchenGate video. Okay? So if Cash catches fire, and he could, that might end up being... not his downfall, because that's negative, and I'm not going to... That might end up being something that is going to, you know, trigger something. You know, I don't think as a gubernatorial candidate you should have painted your face like you're going to the Super Bowl. I'm not making fun of him. I'm sincerely not. He's the only candidate in American history, a governor candidate, that actually, you know... People, that is not fitting the perception of what a gubernatorial candidate is. And I encourage Cash... I encourage his people not to be pissed off at what I'm saying, because I've been very complimentary of them, but to take out a pen and paper
to use
what I'm, my 30 years of experience, my years in the media, my years as a politician, as a reality show bird dog and creator, and a car dealer. You know, I know what I'm talking about.
Has he reached out to you, John?
Not at all.
Okay.
So from where,
but that, you know, that's usual. I mean, you know, none of my 12 opponents when I ran for Congress reached out for me. Mark Kirk reached out to me because we became close friends. And when I ran for Congress, you know, nobody reached out for me except my opponent. She bought a car for me. So that's it.
So from where you sit right now, from everything you know from Party Insider and all that, how do you think it's going right now to get us on the ballot?
Well, I think you got to, you know, you got 15,000 signatures and it's halfway and we need 50,000. We're in trouble, to be honest with you. Number two, we have no money. And this is something that, like, Ryan Mahoney actually said to me that, you know, I got pledged $500,000 from 800 to 1,000 car dealers in the state. And, you know, that money, I'm not going to raise that money now. I don't, even if I wanted to, I don't think I could, not being a candidate.
Yeah.
So, you know, one thing that, for people that I highlighted in my speech today to the Peoria chapter was, we need to raise money. You hire professional, you know, fundraisers, part-time fundraisers. It should be money, 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 money. Because you ain't going anywhere. We ain't not going anywhere if you do not have cash in the bank, if you can't buy media. And all of this, you know, gun shows and parades, they're fine. And they are important. And I'm a grassroots guy. But if you can't get your name out en masse and comport yourself as not a legitimate candidate, but a candidate that people are from the pattern recognition. Mm-hmm. We expect the candidate to have the light blue shirt on, the nice tie, the wife on his arm, or the woman with her husband and walking on the beach and the hair blowing. I'm sorry, that's just what people expect.
Yeah.
You have to give them something to what they expect, and if they don't see you on TV, you know, you can't tweet their Kardashian, you know, their reality show. Well, it's true. We live in the Kardashian.
Well, it sounds a lot like
you
Mitt
know,
Romney.
We're the 30-second soundbite. You're not on TV. You're not relevant. Vince McMahon said it. If I put you on TV for 6 weeks, I can make you a superstar. So we got to get our candidates on TV somehow, some way. Oh, yeah. And that takes money.
Well, assuming he's on the ballot then, does he get 5%?
Not a chance.
Wow.
Not a chance.
Not a chance.
Well, even if
why do you feel
past,
so strongly about that?
Well,
because go ahead, Dan.
I would say even if you look at past records, especially in the 2014 election with Chad Grimm, Are you still, like, would you still have that opinion? I mean, considering that, like, the percentage.
Well, tell me what, I am being, Cash, if you're listening, I am being John Stewart, political analyst. Can we all agree on that?
Yeah. Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Tell me what Cash is going to do that Chad Brim couldn't have done. I don't know.
I'm on the Cash campaign, so I'm going to answer it. I helped get Cash on the Capital Connection, and I did it because I analyzed data over the last four election cycles. Chad Grimm collected about 34 signatures. He did not fill out surveys that radio stations sent him or news stations. He showed up to the Chicago Tribune editorial board, and they basically said they felt like it would be dangerous to put him in power.
I understand.
And they did not. They said Julie Fox was really the only person they might consider staying behind. That being said, Chad Grimm did not.
Do you want me to tell you what's going to happen in the editorial? Okay. Okay.
Cash Jackson now is a 20-year veteran, which is respected over Chad Grimm coming from business.
Absolutely.
He is charismatic, like you said. He is going around the state. Despite what I thought would happen, he is getting on media outlets. He went on the Dan Proft show.
I could not. I am absolutely stunned at what he's getting, and I applaud him.
I am out petitioning, and when I am out petitioning, I have had Claire Ball on my thing. That's usually who I hear. And I've had people say, oh, is that for this Cash guy too?
Yeah.
There is word getting out there. And Chad Grimm pulled about 3.5%. And he did well in this in these central Illinois districts. I've broken down all the data.
I can answer.
Sam McCann would be the only thing that would stop us from getting 5%. If Sam McCann does not get on the ballot,
I still disagree, because here's what's going to happen: Cash Jackson gets on the ballot. The Chicago Tribune is going to immediately run a story on him because he is on the ballot as a third party candidate.
On the ballot, it will happen.
We know what the story is going to be. It's going to be family court arrests. Divorced twice, changed his name, the biological KitchenGate video. Well, I'm not saying anything negative about him. I am telling you what the Tribune is going to write about.
And
now, they put on Navy veteran this and that. He catches fire. If he catches fire, I am looking you in the eye, and I am telling you, I have heard directly that the commercials are edited, ready to roll. The biological KitchenGate video, he is going to get slammed, souffled, and switchbladed. Okay. Now, I'm not saying it's going to be successful.
Yeah, I agree.
But we are not going to get 5% if you do not get the mom from Aurora and the farmer from Pekin. And you're not going to get them by a guy that does not fit the template of what we think is going to be the executive. He's a stay-at-home dad, and we're going to expect him to talk with Jeff Bezos of Amazon.
Yeah.
He's never run a business. He's never been in the business
world. I agree with everything you said, but I have to close this with one
and
thing.
And women vote.
And he is not Donald Trump.
They do.
I will admit, Donald Trump had one up. But we had evangelical women going out and voting for
Donald Trump had money. Cash has no. You are talking about, you are telling me that a guy going around the state in his car is going to get 400,000 people to vote for him.
What I'm telling
and I'm
you
telling you, after 30 years of experience, if you are not on TV and radio, it ain't going to happen.
What I'm telling you is evangelical women voted for a guy that said, I grab women by their pussies because I'm a billionaire.
But he was a billionaire.
But he was a TV star.
All right, guys.
Order.
I'm not fighting.
I just need to make a comment. I don't make this comment that often, but as a woman,
okay. So none of us can relate.
I'm sorry, I'm just none saying, like, as a woman, a I think input. I should make an opinion about
absolutely.
This.
Absolutely.
Okay, so, like, as a woman, in terms of the whole, like, Donald Trump thing, like, I wasn't offended by it because I wasn't surprised by it. Mm-hmm. Like, I literally was just like, yeah, Donald Trump seems like the type of guy that would grab women by the pussies and be like, this is okay because I have a shit ton of money. I was like, that's exactly who the guy I thought was. Like, I was not surprised at all.
And
here's the thing in terms of Cash Jackson, if you actually look at the video, it is a joke. And at the same time, like, it is a little bit kind of like, excuse me, like, what the hell? But at the same time, like, I'm not really that offended by it.
I'm not offended by it either.
But I do want to say,
can we get that across? I'm not offended by it.
No, but I'm.
My point is the judgment of pointing it out on the freaking airway.
I'm not talking about you being offended by it. I'm talking about women in general being offended by it. I feel like what happens is that people have an initial, like, hot reaction to it,
and then they kind of like forget about it. That's what happens, is that they like they hear about it and like they're like hot about it in the instant, wait like a week, and they're like, oh, what was it? Like they forget, and it's not that big a, like an issue. And so I feel like it's something that's
well, really I'm going to tell you that the Democrats and the Republicans are going to make it a big issue
because they're. But that's the thing is that
and that's something that I can't
they
stop.
Will but make
that's
it why a as big a personal,
if he catches fire.
But that's why as a personal critique to Cash, I think it's just if he can develop a better response. When that does happen, then he'll be able to kind of quash it. Right it, now, I think that's...
Well, I think he did a pretty good job on Chicago Tonight where he said, you know, it was a joke. I actually commend him the way he just kind of fluffed it off. And
yeah.
I think that, that was a pretty good...
What about...
I think that was a pretty good a way of dealing with it. Again, and this is something that I talked about that you're going to... With my candidacy, why I stayed in, I felt that... If somebody could open the door to me, they would say, oh, yeah, the wrestler. Oh, yeah, he ran before. People like him. The media must like him because they talked nice about him. And it's there was no blatant negativity with my campaign. And that is the only – I never trash Cash. That is the only thing that I did not convince this party is that whatever you think, there was no – speed bumps with John Stewart with someone looking to vote for me. And with Cash, there are four or five. You can take that wherever way you want.
The term in Peoria is bash on Cash, not trash.
Well,
cash.
I'm not I'm not bashing on it. And if him and his people are mad at what I'm saying, well, I'm speaking
nobody,
facts.
Nobody likes criticism in, this, in well, the Libertarian group.
Anyway, no, they don't.
But what about this philosophy? And yeah. Trump lived this. There's no bad publicity. By legitimizing... Cash's campaign, if the Republicans or Democrats run anti-Cash ads, they're basically advertising for him. And that would be the Trump.
I would totally agree with that. Name recognition. But in the highlight of the Me Too movement, where I think women are going to come out in mass in the state of Illinois and vote in this election cycle, you know, Cash Jackson, you know, didn't show up for a submarine. Who cares? Thank you for putting my name out there. But Cash Jackson, you know, misogynist against women, the way they're going to portray it, to me, is a death blow.
Well, if you
now you're talking to a guy that's been doing this for 30 years.
But okay,
do you know how
you
many? Do you know
Aziz?
How many counties in Illinois that Chad Grimm got above 5%?
I don't know. I know maybe Jason. 4 or 5. I think he got.
No, he got about 70.
Okay.
Chad Grimm, in my opinion, as everybody knows, I think he was a terrible candidate. And even a terrible contributor to the Libertarian Party in Illinois.
Can I say you guys picked him?
Well,
I didn't.
We also picked FDR years ago.
I think there was 30 people at the convention.
I don't think any of us were at that convention.
No, I'm just saying.
But
the Libertarian picked Chad, and you know.
I disagree with you on that. Cash can get 5% because I think Cash can do a hell of a lot better. Than in the southern counties of Illinois, being I-80 South.
I think Cash will rock. I think Cash will rock in the southern counties.
That will counter where he may
fail. So you guys, can I say this?
Sam McCann gets on, it's
yeah,
over.
And that's,
well, I agree with that, too.
And you guys know, and Jason can confirm this, I've done my part for Cash's campaign.
Yes.
You know, I've fallen in line and done what I needed to do. But I'll tell you this, though. If Sam McCann gets on the ballot, we better start talking about Claire Ball and Mike Lehaney. That's what we need to talk
And again,
about.
I am sitting here giving you my 30-year analysis, inside information that I know, and based on facts. And you know, I am not throwing him under the bus at all.
No.
I am simply asking people to take heed, listen to what I'm saying. Let's figure out a way when it does happen, you know, how we can get around it. And that's it. That's all I'm saying about the guy.
All right. And on that's it, this is where we go to. It's 38 minutes into the show, and we love a 30-minute show. And thankfully, I'm not yelling at Dana this
but
week.
But was that fire or what?
Woo, yeah.
Love it.
So, okay, any closing comments? Anybody?
I feel like I would bring it up, but I just got to go with it. I talked to Cash directly about it, but I absolutely 100 and completely disagree with his tax policy that he identified as a progressive tax, and I dislike it entirely.
Maybe he'll do a live feed about it.
All right.
So.
Crossing my fingers.
Anything else?
Jason, any closing comment?
No, I think we basically
closed it. Dana?
No, I think I just want to make, I do want to make just like one point really quick. With the whole thing with Aziz Ansari, that's kind of something that changed a little bit of the Me Too movement. So that's something that maybe should be taken consideration, is that people kind of took a step back and were like, hey, well, this might not be necessarily like all these people are thrown on the bus.
The court of public opinion maybe is too swift sometimes.
Exactly. So, yeah. So I think that kind of changed a little bit of the dialogue, and that's something that is a little bit more relevant to the cash conversation also. So that's my last comment.
Hey, Danny, you got anything chapter development-wise, any new chapters that you've talked about?
Actually, yeah, there is a new one in Sangamon County, which is in Springfield. So if anyone is in the Springfield area, please make sure you go to their chapter meetings. They are on the last Monday of every single month. We are kind of changing around the location, but the recent one was at Godfather's Pizza at and Dirksen Parkway at 7 p.m., so that might be the one kind of in the future. But Sangamon County, Springfield, it's going to be hopping, and please join us if you can.
Big deal. So my closing comments real quick is that I know that we've gone a little bit kind of, I don't want to say negative, we've discussed some hard issues tonight, but I think everyone around here can agree that John was very positive about our party in the meeting, and I want to take that away, that man, he is committed to this party and is an advocate for us. He's going to be a big deal, you know, and maybe he'll run for Senate.
Well, I don't think I came off negative here. I was just talking about my
passionate,
political analysis.
Passionate,
yeah.
Passionate.
Yeah. Serious passion.
I would agree.
And what we believe here is we believe in having an honest face-to-face discussion. Yes. That's what this podcast is about. And so, but Jacob?
I'm good. John, thank you for coming. It was great to see you.
My pleasure.
My
pleasure.
To you. You're the man.
All right, and for anybody who doesn't know, what's the website, guys?
LibertyPlays.com.
All right, make sure to drink those tears, and we will see you next month. Thanks.